Just Riley came over the house late last night. She told me Dylan Henchy isn't DJ's real father.
What? Zabel?
Deacon Mark was the last call Aaron McMenamin made.
We're gonna question him right here.
The house of God?
Makes it harder for him to lie. We're looking for Deacon Mark. Is he in?
What's going on?
Ask your father. He lied to me.
Where the hell do you even hear crap like that anyway?
Why the hell are you calling her?
I want to find out how this whole custody thing works.
I want my son back because he deserves a lot better than you.
I know what you've been through. And I know you're worth saving.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of East Town and Down, the unofficial podcast of Mayor of East Town, starring Academy Award winner Kate Winslet. I'm here with my wonderful co-host, Leah Bonema. How the heck are you, Leah? What did you think of this week's episode?
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here with you. I wanted to call you immediately afterwards, but you know, with the time difference, I was like, it's late. Hold back, Leah. But I was like, man, I am depressed. And you saw it coming like right from the beginning. You're like, this woman can't get out of her own way. And, you know, so I was just like, can we get to next Sunday to start digging out of this? That's how I felt. You're lucky you didn't get a call at 1 a.m.
You could have texted me or called me. I was probably up taking notes.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I'm just so afraid that some people keep their phone on when they go to sleep, and then I'd wake you up, and then you never want to be my friend again, and you'd be like, okay, you need to calm down.
I'm like that too. But I know it's about work. So it's us, you know, doing the work of recapping this wonderful show. This was a big one. Enter number two, episode three. What do you think is the significance or meaning of that title?
Oh, I completely forgot about the title.
The first two episodes were pretty straightforward episode titles, but this one, I don't know, two suspects that they kind of talked about? I don't know.
I'm going to have to think about that. I think, you know.
Listeners, hit us up. Let us know what you think the meaning of this episode is.
I totally should have brainstormed on that, but by the end of it, I'd forgotten about the title. You know what I mean?
I hear you. Well, let's just get right into it. We open on a close-up shot of Mayor staring at Drew lovingly, and Drew is over with Siobhan. He's playing with some building blocks, and she looks like she's just thinking about the possibility of losing Drew to Carrie after we get that subpoena from Delaware County. What do you think?
That's what I thought it was. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just pretty straightforward. She's got that going on, and it's going to come back, and things are going to come to a head.
It also reminded me of the scene from the last week's where she was in the pediatrics office and she was crying and said that she felt like she didn't do a good job.
Yes.
As a parent, and how you could sort of see in her, like, her love for her grandson and like a wanting to do right by him.
This is her, literally her second chance, or what she believes to be her second chance at getting things right. Yeah. She's definitely, it's the foundation of the whole episode for the most part, for at least one of the major actions that she does that we'll talk about later. I almost went to the store to get some Rolling Rock for this episode. but I decided not to. But the next time I go out, I'm going to have a Rolling Rock and drink one. I don't know, just whatever. And who cares?
My cousin Mary texted me, she's in Bucks County. And she was like, she's watching the show. Mm-hmm. And she said she's listening to our podcast. And she said, I love that she's drinking Rolling Rock.
It's a good beer. Like, I remember when I was living in Chicago, got out of grad school. And there was one of my classmates that booked, we're for theater school and stuff. He booked a Rolling Rock commercial, and it was kind of a big deal. He was the first person to book a thing And we would drink Rolling Rocks because he, you know, booked that gig.
It's so cool.
Yeah, but it's a good beer. I just haven't had it in a long time. I was going to get some delivered, but that would be too much, way too much for a beer that's only $8 to get a six pack.
It's kind of fun though.
Oh yeah, yeah. Next week though. Okay, so we cut to Mayor driving to the coroner's office. This is basically exposition. We find out that Aaron's time of death was between midnight and 2 a.m. No signs of rape, and there's a missing finger that looks to be severed by a bullet. And that's intercut with Kenny's cousins, John and Billy, looking for him because they left the in the middle of the night. Kenny left and he took the gun while they were asleep, and so they're looking for him. And they go to Creedom Creek. They find Kenny in this basically the same spot where Aaron was found, drunk off his ass. And he tells them that he killed Dylan. And they're basically like, "I got to go to the police station." What did you think of that? Like, that's.
I still think it's something is off with John.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really? Okay.
I feel like he's given us some weird facial expressions since the first episode.
The faces in this series that everybody makes is just, I don't know if they were directed. They're all great actors, but it's almost just like, okay, the faces that you're making is leading us to believe. Did you have something to do with this?
Yeah.
Maybe you didn't kill her, but you know something's going on. And we, like, I'm questioning you.
Yeah, I don't know. That's exactly. I'm always like, are they doing this on purpose to make us mistrust everybody?
Yeah.
Or are you hiding something relevant to this story? You know?
Right.
So I thought it was important information that, you know, that Aaron was, we got the time of death. We also got that she wasn't assaulted, even though they removed her clothing.
Mm-hmm.
And then, obviously going to see Kenny and Kenny being like, hey, I killed him. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just like very upfront about it. And like, you know, I handled this.
Yeah. And so that intercut scene, we're trying to, so after the exposition from the coroner, Zabel and Mayor are walking and talking. This is kind of like this whole little sequence is for us to tell the audience what's going on. And they're just basically like, if it's not a sexual assault, then why'd they take her clothes off? That's what Zabel says. She said, well, to make it, no, Mayor says that. And Zabel's like, oh, to make it look like one. I really love the score that was underneath them in this sequence.
The scoring was great in the sequence.
I love strings. I love the strings in this and that. I believe it was violins or something. And she was killed somewhere else and dumped at the creek. And, you know, Mayor says it was 28 degrees that night. Why mess around in the freezing cold when you can mess around in the backseat of a car? And then right at that moment, she gets a phone call. And that phone call is probably the police station or John or somebody telling them that Kenny's at the station and he wants to confess for what he thinks is the murder of Dylan. So Dylan, it's for the murder of Dylan. We get to the cut to the, I don't know if this is an interrogation, but it's more of a questioning. He's turned himself in. She tells him that Dylan's still alive. And Kenny's just kind of like crestfallen a little bit.
I think that it also with the hall walking that right before it, it shows that they're relationship is progressing. There's more of an ease between Mayor and Colin Zabel, and that she has that relationship with him where she's like, why would they do that if it's 28 degrees? Like that she's right. The senior, has more experience, but that she's more opening up and sharing with him and, you know, walking with him and talking with him. So it's like a progression in their relationship.
Exactly. Yeah, they're becoming more partners, and it looks like that Wawa coffee's helped out their relationship. Yeah. That's all it takes. Wawa. And what's it? No sugar, two creams or something?
Yeah. I think a girl just wants to be thought of, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So that reset really helped them. And they're becoming more buddies. So then we cut to the hospital where the doctor is telling Dylan's parents that the bullet went through his posterior and didn't hit any major organs. And they performed a laminectomy, which is a type of surgery. I looked it up too. I'll read it. It's a type of surgery in which a surgeon removes part or all of the vertebral bone, which is the lamina, and it helps ease pressure on the spinal cord or the nerve roots that may be caused by injury, herniated disc, or narrowing of the canal, spinal stenosis, or tumors, and that he may not walk again. So it's just right above the butt area where he got shot, and it's because it affected his spinal cord, he might not walk again. And that's devastating news.
And they also say that had he not been brought in at that time, and I don't believe they tell us who brought him in. Like, it could have been passerby, or it could have been that John went over there and got him.
Ooh, you think?
Well, they didn't tell us, and they specifically said if you hadn't been brought in. And so, right. I mean, so they left it open for us to want to know who brought him in.
That's a good catch. Yeah, I didn't even think of that. Yeah. I just thought it was just like some random passersby. Absolutely. The next scene is it opens with a video clip of Kevin and Carrie. Siobhan is making some type of documentary about her brother. And it's almost another reason for Siobhan to resent her mother, because she tells a story of the first. Kevin's tick started just being out of whack when he had Tourette's, and they went to see a Harry Potter movie with a mayor. Kevin and Siobhan went to see Harry Potter. He had this tick and these kids were weirded out. They started making fun of him, and mayor just made them leave before the trailers, I guess, before the movie even started.
Well, Siobhan said into her documentary that she's making that her mom made them leave because she was so embarrassed. Mm-hmm. And which might be true, but Mayor doesn't remind me of a kind of person who's embarrassed. And I do know, I mean, I'm constantly giving her the benefit of the doubt because, you know, I want to love her and she's our girl, but I do think that sometimes, and this could be like a thing that happens between Mayor and Siobhan's relationship later on, where they go through these things and they talk about what it actually was. Sometimes people are like, oh, you were embarrassed of me, or you were embarrassed of him, when it really could have been that she thought that was protecting Kevin by keeping him away from these people. Like, it could have been the opposite of what they took away from it.
Or she could have lashed out at those kids. You never know. Sometimes you do things and hold yourself back, so because of what you're afraid that you might do. Mm. So maybe she pulled them out of that situation. And this episode is kind of Siobhan heavy in a lot of ways. And we didn't touch on this last week, but it seems like after Kevin's death, a lot of the burden has been put on Siobhan to do a lot of things, to take care of Drew. And she talks about how, you know, in a later scene that Mayor acknowledges that Siobhan does take care of Drew, that she's great with him. We talked about her like putting together his turtle tank and all that, but she's also sending Siobhan to a private school because she wants better for her. But like you alluded to last week about the mother-daughter relationship, especially she's 17 years old and moms and daughters often tend to clash around that age.
Yeah.
When they're that age. So there's love for her, but it's just that Mare's just got so much shit going on. Her world's collapsing around her, and she doesn't have time to really connect with Siobhan like she should be doing.
Well, also, she clearly doesn't have a relationship with her mother. That's obviously, they love each other. Obviously, right. They support each other, but it's not a healthy, communicative, like, they're going to show up, but they're going to, you know, not speak well to each other. So right. I think Siobhan and, well, probably Siobhan has more because she's obviously doing a lot of like therapy, like she's doing the documentary, mm-hmm. Has more communicative skills, but I think Mare just doesn't know how to say those things to people.
And it doesn't seem like Mare has an outlet. Siobhan is, although she's younger and she's not facing all, as her parents broke up, her brother killed himself, but she's like focusing on her art, her music, and then probably this documentary is a passion project, even though it seems to be like a school assignment or something.
I immediately thought it was a college essay. That was my, you know, when people have to like write something about themselves to get into school, or not necessarily write. She's obviously creating it.
Mm-hmm. Probably it's, I mean, she is, you know, in the first episode around that time, she had to submit for the, I guess, like the applications for the colleges and stuff. Like there was a deadline. It was the 10th and she had to turn something in on the 15th, like those deadlines for admissions thing. So maybe it's something like that, but she's obviously a good student. She's really smart. I just wanted to highlight that because we didn't really touch on it. That was my fault. Didn't touch on it last week, but
it's not your fault. You got so much in there.
Yeah, we got a lot in there. So yeah, like I was thinking like maybe, and then it's interesting in the scene where Carrie was like, you know, cursing and was annoyed by Siobhan, and Kevin just seemed to be really chill. You know, he seemed to be like a sweet guy that just had problems, you know, and he didn't get to talk to anybody. Anyway, all right. The next scene. Mare is clipping Drew's toenails. Drew does not like it. So Siobhan calms him down by playing I Spy with him. And it's really a sweet scene. I really like that scene. Like the image of her clipping his toenails. And you can see, I don't know if that kid, if they told him to do those, that eye twitch or something, but goddamn, he's a good actor. You know, you could tell like he had the twitch that they were talking about, and it just made, it was so, he's obviously a cute, adorable kid, but like that moment was just so, it resonated with me. And then Siobhan is connecting with him, telling him, you know, to, you know, play I Spy. He's calming down, and he begins to tell, he says, Nana said that I might need to live with my mom. And Mare looks up, she is pissed.
Yes, she is.
And she's like, oh, Nana's being silly or whatever. And then Nana goes into the kitchen to play Fruit Ninja and on her iPad. And Mare
goes, so funny.
Yeah. And then Mare goes in and they have it out after Siobhan leaves. Siobhan is getting ready to leave to go over to Frank's. Behind, you know, their next door, behind neighbor, whatever you call it. And they get into this argument, like, why would you tell him about this? Why would you tell this kid, he's 4 years old, that, you know, and Helen's like, if this happens, if they take him away, oh crap, where is it? They argue. Helen called Kathy Dryers, who worked at Child and Youth Services. She's saying that, you know, Carrie will get custody because she's the mother and there's nothing anybody can do about it. And Helen basically wants to prepare Drew for the inevitable. And because otherwise he'll feel like the ground is falling underneath him. And I think this is a great scene. They're interrupted by Lori, who comes in, who senses the bad vibes.
Yeah.
And Mare tells her it's the bad vibe of betrayal. I thought this scene was really great. Like they just like this explosion, this just like it just tells a lot. It's just Mare doesn't want to hear it. Like it's something that I think Helen is right. I mean, just the way that this whole episode is set up and this scene in particular is basically, to me, seems like Mare, what do you think, Mare having to come to grips with this stuff? that it's a possibility that Drew's going to get taken away by his mom.
I also think, to back up an inch, the toenail scene into that scene coming off the other one, I thought it showed how they all love. Like, Siobhan is very, like, she's kind and sort of empathetic and distracts him and makes it like, and Mare obviously loves him so much, but she's just like, I'm going to go in there and cut those nails. You know what I mean?
They're
like working together in that way, even though they love so differently. And then Nana comes in and she's like, just her way is she's trying to prepare him.
Mm-hmm.
And then Mare is trying to make it not happen. And it's everybody's intention is coming from love.
Yeah.
But they all do it so differently that it sets like a bonfire of anger. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But then I think it leads into the kitchen scene where she's like, she feels betrayed, like her mom was overstepping boundaries when her mom is just really trying to protect and help and, like, you know, and so they're all coming from wanting, they all care about the kid. They all care about Drew, but it's, you know, there's just so much there between them.
Yeah. And it's like, it's almost like the carryover from the scene where we first meet Carrie, where we, the audience, first meet Carrie. And you can just tell, like, it's a credit to the acting, to Jean Smart, where she's just like, ah, fuck, she looks like she's ready to take the kid away. Like, you know, like she's, it looks like Carrie's doing the work to get back.
Yeah.
To get back to a normal life. And she's dreading it. And the way that she's going to face it is just kind of owning up to it, or just being accepting the fact that this is going to happen. So everybody else should start doing it, and Mare especially.
Yeah.
But they're not the problem. It's Mare. She's the problem.
I mean, obviously you want Mare to be able to keep the kid just because she's our person. And then, but I mean, obviously I think it always moms want to get their kids, and she's doing the work to get her kid back. So that's what's just going to happen.
Yeah. Right. Right. We get to, so Lori's there, they share a rolling rock. She gives her a rolling rock and they go outside on the porch. I love that porch.
What do you call it?
That screen, it's like a screen-in porch or something.
Yeah, it's a screen-in porch. I call it a porch, but I think I call it a porch.
I like that. So they're out there.
It's raining.
It's raining.
Also, you can tell how far back Lori goes with them, because she just walk. You know, often when you walk in on a fight, like, you feel uncomfortable and you're like, should I go? You know what I mean? But she's just like, hey.
That's Marin Helen. She's like, hey. Because she comes in and kind of, you know, claims the room, not in an asshole way, but she's just like, hey, come on.
Yeah.
Chill out. Stop this shit. You know, without even saying it. Brilliant actress.
I referred to her as your girlfriend, Lori.
I love her so much. She's the best. And so Lori tells her, you know, basically the cliff. Lori tells Mare about the cliffhanger from last week. Jess Riley says that she doesn't believe Dylan. She doesn't believe DJ is Dylan's son. And Mare's like, what the fuck? And she makes a beeline to Frank's and confronts him during family game night.
Yep.
And Frank is like, hey, it's game night, we could talk about this tomorrow. She's like, no. And she's like, okay, then basically what you said to me about Aaron McMenamin, you were lying. And then Frank's like, I gotta go now. Faye doesn't look too pleased. She's making a face. She's making a look. And so it finally comes out that he bought some diapers and wipes and formula for Aaron because he felt bad for her. This was after Kevin's death. And so he paid for, like, some, you know, baby supplies. She asked him point blank, did you have sex with her? He says no. But he agrees to, you know, take a paternity test. One of my notes was, nobody gives a fuck about Faye's son who's in town from California. And it's just like, and Frank says, I'm not afraid of a paternity test, just like I'm not afraid to talk about our son.
Yes.
That's the second time somebody in the series has mentioned it. First is Brianna, and now is Frank. And I think we'll get it at least one more time in this episode. Siobhan is involved in this scene too.
Mm-hmm.
I want your thoughts on this scene. And then I want to suggest something to you and see what you think about it.
What I thought was so interesting, and this is Mare, she's constantly doing this. She could give herself a softer landing with the way she chooses to be. The way she chooses to deal with things is head on. She's going to deal with it right up top, but she could make it easier on herself. Before she walked over to the house, she said to Lori, no, he didn't do this. Like, she believes that he didn't sleep with her. She wants to understand why. She believes he didn't sleep with Aaron. She wants to understand why he lied. So had she said to him, I don't think you did this, or I don't believe you did this, but I want to understand why, it would have been a totally different conversation. And that's even what she thinks. But right. It's like she refuses to soften blows, or like, it's like she, and that would catch more bees with honey. You know what I mean? He would obviously understand why in a murder investigation, he withheld something and then somebody saw it, why he has to then exonerate himself. But she doesn't come in like, I don't believe that you did this. You know what I mean? So she never sort of in any way makes things easy for her or for anybody around her. And I think it's really, at the same time, you admire her seeking of the truth. And even though it's such an uncomfortable situation with all the family there, and she's like, okay, if you're not stepping out, I'm just saying it right here.
Mm-hmm. She's like a bull in a china shop. She has no tact.
None.
She's just all over the place. Siobhan's in that scene. She's making some faces. Part of me feels like Frank would not have done this if it wasn't for Siobhan. Part of me feels like Siobhan might have mentioned Aaron to Frank, and then Frank wanted to help out. I'm just throwing that out there. Maybe it's like a theory. It's not anything bad. I just think that maybe, you know, Siobhan and Frank were talking about her, and that's probably, maybe she was the catalyst in Frank getting those supplies.
She was making faces. So and I feel like that's a possibility.
Yeah. And she broke up that fight, you know, at the Brianna beating her up and stuff.
Which is obviously a caring person who's like invested in people.
Yeah.
I do wish that people gave Mare more of a break. Like, they're always angry at her.
Yeah.
But it's like, that's her job.
Yeah. That's her. That's who she is. Yeah.
Like, he lied during a murder investigation.
Yeah.
So now he has to answer for it. He's her ex-husband. She's the head of the investigation. Obviously, it's a conflict of interest. So she needs to know about it right away. I don't know why everybody, like, with his wife or fiance getting so mad at her. I get that it's because she just walked in and she has tactless, but also, you know, this is, obviously this is how we're set up to be defensive for Mare, right. But you're like, come on, mm-hmm. Give her a little bit of a break.
Yeah. Cut her some slack, because he brought it up. Like, he brought it up in the last episode. He was like, hey, what, I mean, that's messed up about Aaron. Did you know anything about her? You taught her. No.
Then, yeah, he did lie. And then how's Mare the bad person?
Right, right. It's just the way she handled it. And he should have, Mare wants to talk. You know, things are going to be uneasy with Faye and with everybody else. If she's coming to the house like that, deal with that shit right away and just be like, man up and be like, okay, let's talk about this.
Yeah.
Instead of just like, well, we could talk about it tomorrow. Oh, come on, yeah, Frank.
She's not going to talk about it tomorrow. You got to know that about her, Frank.
Exactly. And then what do you think about that? I'm not afraid to talk about our son.
I think it's just like hitting on that theme that, you know, Mare obviously shut down. She hasn't dealt with it. She, you know, it probably it obviously or seemingly was the catalyst for their marriage, you know, disintegrating, that mm-hmm. she still hasn't seen a therapist about it. And he wanted to deal with it, and she has not taken down those walls yet.
And it seems like he was the quote unquote good cop and Mayor was the bad cop when it came to parenting and actually dealing with those issues, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we can go back to that scene with the pediatrician, that's one of the most important scenes of the whole series right now, at least when it comes to character. Yeah. I don't know, character development, why she is the way that she is.
Yeah, it's like that we know that she thinks these things, like she thinks Siobhan is loving and like took care of Drew and is like, but she doesn't say it to her. And she thinks that Frank did a great job and was like there for the kids and did better than her, but she doesn't say it to him. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? She has said it. So they don't get that she is introspective on it in that way yeah. because she's so closed off or on purpose, walling people out.
Because there's a moment, I hope I don't forget it. I don't think I will, but I want to touch on it to just kind of highlight your point in a later scene. Okay, so the next scene, Mayor's at the hospital talking to Dylan's parents. Dylan's mom says that Erin was a good mother. Sometimes she would come to the house in her dad's truck just to squeeze DJ for a minute, and Dylan didn't like that going on, but you know, his mom understood because she's also a mother and she understands, and she didn't have a problem with that. And then we cut to Frank being questioned by Zabel, and he tells him that John Ross dropped him off at 2:30 a.m. He reiterates that he didn't have sex with Erin. He takes the test. All this is intercut with, in this whole sequence, Mayor comes into the police station. The chief tells her, hey, just a heads up, Frank and Faye are here. You know, we've also got the phone records, Aaron's phone records and all that. I want to see how far I need to go on that. Your thoughts on that? So basically she goes in there, Mayor goes in there, and she notices Frank. She says good morning to Faye. Faye doesn't respond. She goes into her office and she pretends to pick. She's looking at the phone records, but mm-hmm. she's kind of peeping over to see what's going on with Frank. And she's just kind of like hiding, and they leave. It's just Frank, you know, saying that John's his alibi. What else? I just said that my note there was just Mayor is hilarious watching them leave, pretending that she isn't looking. She shares the records with Zabel. Deacon Mark is the last person that Erin talked to.
Which I told you so.
Yeah, you were right.
Not you, I just met everybody. Yes, you know what I mean? Yeah. I was like, this guy is. And right before that, I did think that was another opportunity for Mayor, because I do think Frank is, and I may be totally wrong, he seems level-headed enough and he knows her well enough that if she had said, I didn't think you did this, you just mm-hmm. have to clear it, he would yeah. be like, I get it. And that was when he was like they almost said something when he was through the window. That was her another opportunity for her to be like, just doing the job, you know? But she didn't do it again. And
she avoided it.
I just, you know, I get, like, if I was Faye, I would obviously be like, I fell in love with this man and now I have to live by his ex-wife, and like, she's constantly angry and they have so much baggage, and she like, you know, but also I want to be like, Faye, why can't you cut her some slack?
Yeah, you signed up for this.
You understand that he lied, and so now he has to get, why is that Mayor's fault? I just hated that when she gave her that face. I wanted to be like, wipe that face off your face. Yeah, you're a police officer, then you have to get called in. That's just how it works.
I love it. Wipe that face off your face.
I just hated it, you know?
Yeah, I didn't like that either. I was like, you signed up for this shit and you agreed for him to buy that house. Maybe he already bought that house after they broke up, but I mean, you signing up to this dude that has a family and yeah. has this baggage around him. So, I mean, buck up.
Buck up.
Yeah. So Deacon Mark's the last person Erin talked to. They go on the phone at least. They go over to the church to talk to him. They see Father Dan Hastings, who is a mayor's cousin. Zabel's like, oh, is everybody, you related to everybody in this town? And he tells him that Deacon Mark is over at the church, and they go over to him and question him. He says that he was at the rectory all night with Father Peter at St. Michael's. He said that, you know, him and Aaron had a relationship. First, he said, we had a relationship. A friendship. And they asked, has he ever been alone with her? He says, yes. But, you know, sometimes it happens. You know, it's not a big deal. So basically he lied to Father Dan. Yes. And he, you know, I lost touch with her after she got pregnant. So he's a liar. And he said he doesn't think it was weird to take calls from, you know, people in the congregation, especially the teens, because they need the most help sometimes. And she asked him, how does he feel about that type of relationship? Because priests often get in trouble with hanging with kids. And he's like, that's, you know, he's taken up that battle because it's his vocation to fight against human weakness, loneliness, doubt, hatred, and all that. It's not his battle, but it's Christ's battle. And then Mayor hits him with, you know, well, when you were talking on the phone to Aaron, was that you or was it Christ? And that's and Zabel laughs, and he's like, it was me, detective, is what Deacon Mark says. He says that he's a vessel of Christ. And as they're leaving, she says, oh, can I get access to your phone? You know, we could get a warrant, but, you know, we could do it that way, or you could just give it to us. He gives her the password. Your thoughts on this scene, Leah?
I thought it was another scene where we see Mayor and Colin Zabel. I keep saying his full name because it sounds to me like he's saying Colin is Abel, and even though it's Zabel. So I just like saying the full thing. But
that's fine.
I feel like it's another scene where she's sort of mentoring him and they're getting along better. And he's like, why aren't we should we bring him down to the station? And she's like, no, we'll do it in the church. He's more likely to be honest here. You know, she puts the recorder on. She's just very competent. You know, she asks like up uncomfortable questions. Like, she doesn't have that thing that makes the rest of us uncomfortable. Or if it does, it's buried so deep that she's just. And then, you know, we've all thought he was dicey, like from the beginning. And this is, I feel like if you watch enough murder mysteries, you just have to be like, you can't lie to people, because then even if you didn't do it, you're suspicious.
Mm-hmm.
So he's like, now he's been caught in lies. So,
yeah.
And it looks bad. And I mean, he also makes all those weird faces where we're like, what's going on? Mm-hmm. And, you know, we know that he is hiding information, but I don't, you know, whether it's that thing where it's going to be whether or not he's actually the killer, you know what I mean?
And, you know, he could be, but it's just that maybe Mayor and them, they don't know yet. Sometimes we, the audience, can find out about the killer before the detectives do, but I don't know. She died by a gunshot wound.
He could also be guilty of something.
Yeah, he's guilty of something. Not
that. Like, he could be the father of the child.
Mm-hmm. That's true. That's true.
He could be, because he also lied to the other guy. So it's not like he's just lying to Mayor. He was trying to cover up their relationship.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, maybe he's just the dad. He didn't kill her. I like that, actually. Father Dan asked him, oh, is everything all right? Everything go all right? And he didn't even say anything. He just kind of nodded and just went on about his business. I was like, that's your boss, dude.
Yeah.
Like, what are you doing? I don't know. Yeah, he's definitely a shady character. Next, we see Mayor back at home getting ready for Richard to pick her up for a date.
She's this was like the fun levity scene, I thought.
Yeah, she's pissed because Siobhan's room is a mess and it smells like weed. Or I think she says pot or weed, one of them, one of the two. Helen is excited because she finds out that she's like, you're going out, you're moving on with your life, you're going out on a date. She even suggests that she parades him around Frank's house, and that she grabs his ass just to make Frank jealous. And so Frank knocks on the door, and Mare is basically like, come on, mom, just whatever. Almost like she's a teen, you know.
It was like she was a teenager.
Yeah, like falling back into those roles of mother-daughter. Really nice scene. And then we get Richard knocking on the door, and she's like, oh, come in. And she's like perched on the railing, and you know, they exchange pleasantries. And oh, I see where you get your beauty from. Some people think, like, I don't think Richard's the killer. Richard was with Mare the night that Aaron got killed. He wasn't going anywhere. He was trying to get her to stay. Anyway, so he kind of sweet talks Helen a little bit, and they leave. And during that, before Richard comes in, Helen mentions that Siobhan is with her band at the radio station. And then we cut to Haverford College, the radio station. Ann Harris is the DJ, and she just got done playing a song by Mannequin Pussy, who Siobhan's band was covering one of their songs in the first episode. I think the record is Who You Are, I believe. And Androgynous is the name of Siobhan's band. They're about to perform live at the radio station. But they found out Becca's sick, who's Siobhan's girlfriend. She had too many weed gummies. She throws up and gets her a sweatshirt. These kids aren't ready for prime time. You don't get high before a big gig on the radio when a lot of people are going to listen to you, and you can get more followers and people to, you know, enjoy your band and all that good stuff. It's just not.
It was like 50-50. Siobhan and the guitar guy is ready. And yeah, then the drummer's like, let's take them now. And then Becca's just throwing up on herself. It's just embarrassing.
Yeah. I was mad at them because I was like, this is a big shot. This is an opportunity that you didn't have. You're on a college radio station. You're still in high school.
Yeah.
It's a big deal. It's a big deal for you guys. And you're getting high. Get high after.
Yeah. Just wait 2 hours.
Yeah. Wait a couple hours. I didn't drink or anything in high school, but I was a theater nerd. But I would just be like, hey, whatever, you're going to have fun after the show. You know, whatever.
Well, it made me think of all those scenes that you were talking about where they were giving each other looks, you know, speaking to the, like, there's obviously something else going on in their relationship. There's a problematic, you know, and then maybe this is what it is.
Yeah. And Siobhan looks like she's over it.
So over it. I would be too. You're trying to you're showing up to a gig. It's an opportunity and you can't even, like, she's sabotaging it.
And Anne is giving Siobhan the eye.
She's the eye like nobody's biz.
And this is kind of like another intercut scene where it kind of bounces back from Mare's date with Richard.
Well, prior to that, I did say that scene I felt was the, except for one other scene with Zabel, which was a little levity, this was like the uplifting moment with her and her mom before she went on the date with Richard.
Yes.
And it sort of spoke to this time in that they don't, like, their everything is so hard, like the grandkid, and then there's a murder, and then, you know, her son has killed himself, and then her ex-husband lives behind them. So it was like this moment of, like, everybody got to be, her mom was like teasing her,
yeah,
you know, and got to be like a mom, and then she was like, mom, leave me alone. And it just felt like if for that brief moment they got to be, you know, this like prom night mother daughter silly, like, don't embarrass me, mom, you know. And then when he comes in, she's like, Mare was just telling me all about you, and Mare was like, I was not, you know what I mean, just very, I really loved it.
And then
I just thought that scene was so wonderful because it just shows how much their life is not like that normally. And it was great acting.
Oh yeah. So we,
and then I agree with you that the band thing, it was so irritating, you know. Yeah. And I also feel like Siobhan is in all these relationships where she's holding it together for everybody.
like her mom in a lot of ways. And you're maybe
let this girl shine. You know, she can't keep everybody. All these people are pulling her. Not that I love her mom, but like, you know, this girl, Becca's got to go.
Maybe the reason, one of the reasons why Mare and Siobhan aren't on great of that great of terms, because they're just alike. They're a lot alike in certain ways, holding stuff together.
And they don't recognize it in each other. Mm-hmm. They just do it differently. Right. Also, I really liked the girl who was the DJ, VJ.
She's a cutie. Yeah.
Yeah. And you're like, come on. This is a much better relationship for you.
Yeah. Yeah. And we're going to get to that. Don't worry. Because I kind of felt like when I was writing these notes, I felt like there was something that came, like the date came and then it went back to the radio station. Richard and Mare's date.
Oh, and then it went. But I felt even before there was an official proposal, I felt that between them.
Oh, yeah, I mean? Definitely. Oh, yeah. Because she was like, yeah, you know, so because she was like, yeah, you know, so I'm going to play another song and then I'm just going to throw it to you, you know?
Yeah.
And like, yeah. I was like, oh, I'll just
go get her. Yeah. I'm going to go get her a sweatshirt. You know what I mean? She's being, I think, very kind to Becca.
Oh, yeah.
For Siobhan.
Right. Right. So we go the next. This is like another kind of like an intercut scene. Mare is having dinner with Richard and she mentions that Siobhan is great with Drew. Yep. She tells him about she obviously understands that. She just doesn't tell Siobhan that. And I think
she just doesn't give anybody the compliment.
Yeah. Yeah. She tells another dude that doesn't really know anything yet. So she tells him about her father, who was a detective, who was her best friend. If he was a bartender, I'd be a bartender. If he shoveled shit, I'd probably shovel shit. So she had a great relationship with her dad. He died when she was 13. She asked, Richard about his life and why he became a writer. And he basically said his home life was shit when he was a kid. She basically tells him about all her shit. Like everything's a mess at the moment with her life. She tells him about Carrie. Richard says basically, you know, his ex took away his kid, tells her about all the meaningless sex that he had. When his book came out, that, you know, Maze Landing, his book came out. They made a TV movie in the 90s starring Jill Eikenberry. And he says that when they first meet, though. But he's just, you know, they relate to each other. They're connecting. And he says, look, you know, if you really want Drew to be in your life, you might, even though you feel like you might be conceding to Carrie a little bit, you're really not. And just tell her that you want to be in Drew's life. He's actually giving her good advice.
Yeah, he is giving her good advice. And he's also clearly being very honest about mistakes he's made in the past.
Yeah. And that kind of plays on, you know, what happened in the second episode at the college, at his book ceremony, where he was kind of sucked into that and really loving the attention of all those women. And he was like, oh God, let me go get Mare. You know, he was kind of probably drawn back into that, where he may not have dealt with that in a while, that adoration, because he was kind of a one hit wonder. You know, he made this book and, you know, he was probably drawn back into the adulation or all the love he was getting.
Yeah. And he clearly loves it. And Mare won't have any of it.
Yeah. She's like, dude, what are you doing? So what do you think about this? Like, it's just, this is another, not as major or pivotal as the pediatrician scene, but they're connecting by telling them about themselves, you know, about their life.
Yeah. And he is actually giving her very good advice. And she, I think she doesn't throw it back in his face, which for her, I think was really big. She's not like, I'm not, and she doesn't say that her son killed himself, but she does say that she had a son who died.
Yeah.
So her vulnerability is more so than it's been.
Right.
And I just thought it was a nice look into his character. And I felt like she was sort of at this point where she was letting more in than she had previously.
Yeah. And probably for the first time in a long time.
Yeah.
And maybe she's learning with Richard, because I don't think he's the killer. I think he's a plot device, but
he's like a vehicle for us to see her.
A vehicle for us to see her change and try to make those steps to be open in a way that she wasn't with Frank or anybody else up to this point, maybe.
Yeah, I'm afraid she's going to, you know, what she's going to do to him, who knows, but it would be nice if it, I want her to have something nice.
Yeah, I think we're going to, we'll talk about it at the end of the episode. So we go back to the radio station. They've played, they performed, and it's just Anne and Siobhan in the room together. And Anne's like, hey, you know, so I have one of my friends, I think she said her friend bailed, or she's got an extra ticket to see this band called Boy Genius at the Met on Friday night. And the Met is like this opera house venue in Philly. So that's probably like they're going in. She wants to go to the city to see this band. And the Boy Genius is this band that's started by Julian Baker, Lucy Dacus, and Phoebe Bridgers. Phoebe Bridgers was recently nominated for a bunch of Grammys this past year. She's got this great album called The Punisher. And as soon as she said Boy Genius, I was like, oh, I know. Because I started to fall in love with Phoebe Bridgers' music like this past year. And I was like, oh, she's good. So I was like, oh, shit, you're Boy Genius. All right. You know, anyway, that's me being a nerd. nobody cares. She asked her for she basically is like, I'm asking you out.
She says that. I'm asking you out. This is me asking you out.
And Siobhan says no. And I was like, what the fuck are you doing? And I think it's probably because of Becca, don't you think?
Yeah, I think she feels like she owes Becca, you know, that she can't do that because of Becca. And we're over here like, fuck Becca.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so, you know, that could be the start of something.
I hope it is.
Yeah, me too. So the next scene is at Brandywine Park.
Really quickly, just because Siobhan is very adult. She's handling all these very adult situations. She's kind to people. Mm-hmm. You know, hopefully she'll understand that her mother does think those things about her and she'll work that out. But she's handling all of these adult things. And Becca is a child. She's getting high before, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's like this other woman is like just more on her level. She's like asking her out. You know what I mean? She wants her to go to somewhere nice.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You're like, get somebody who's
on your level. Yeah. Yeah, it's true. All right. Next scene is at Brandywine Park. Mayor and Zabel are at the park talking to a cop who shows them Aaron's missing finger that they found. And it was found by a group of kids who were playing football out there at the park. And Mayor suggests that someone must have picked Aaron up because she couldn't have ridden her bike 13.7 miles away from Creedham Creek where she was found. And they declare the Brandywine Park the crime scene. She suggests that Zabel uses his credentials to get some county firearm canines to sniff out the area. Zabel says it's a long shot, but he agrees to do it. He's like, I don't give a fuck about that. You guys, you said something like, I don't care about you guys not being on duty. You need to get down here. And this is where we see Mayor's true detective skills. They're on display, and Zabel wants to call it a night after being out for 5 hours searching because it's cold and you know it's been 5 hours. Mayor tells him you should have worn a thicker jacket, and she shows him a fragment from an enclosure at the park, like one of those, I don't know what you call those things. I would just say like it's an enclosure, like a house, what do they call that? Like a utility room.
Yeah. Like a shed,
or something.
Or it's like the place where they have the bathrooms or
yeah,
like the equipment.
Yeah. So she finds this, like a fragment on the ground, and then she looks up and She finds a bullet hole in a nearby tree. And he says, you know, good work, hero detective. And that's a callback that Zabel uses on her, because she previously told him that she was trying to finesse him a little bit and calling him the hero detective to get the dogs sent down there. But it's actually her who's the hero detective. I think it was a great scene because we finally see her being good at her job, you know?
Yeah, or solidifying how good she is. She also said to him, when he didn't think he could get the dog, she was like, well, do you have another idea?
Mm-hmm.
But she was like, we know that she got hit by one bullet, you know, and she thinks the finger was like that, her protecting her face. She's like, but there could be other bullets here. Like she always reminds him when he's making an assumption that they don't know if there was other bullets, but they know it was here. Then she's like, well, if you have another idea, and like, he doesn't have another idea. So he brings the dogs in, and then she's going to do the work. It's important to her. She's going to solve this case. She's going to stay there all night in the freezing cold. And she expects, you know, and then she, boom, when they come up to that tree and she's got the flashlight and you can see it. They're like,
yeah. Yeah. I was like, yes. Yeah. I was happy for her in that moment. It made me feel good because, like, okay, finally a win. And then she undercuts herself later.
Yep.
All right. So the next scene, back at the hospital, the doctor is running some tests on Dylan. And it appears that he's on his way to recovery and he will most likely walk again. And his dad tells Dylan about his mother's there. Mother is crying because she's happy, you know, that he's obviously, you know, going to walk again. And so it just leaves Dylan and his dad together. And his dad tells Dylan about the rumors about DJ not being his son. And he tells Dylan that he should take the test to be sure. One thing I wanted to bring up with you that we didn't talk about earlier that I wanted to talk about, you know, basically just, you know, Aaron's friend, you know, telling Lori the it's just like that small town gossip bullshit. Yeah. Like he was just trying to do a nice thing, but that's something that happens. Like Frank was just trying to do a nice thing. And because she saw it, you know, she's like, oh, they had to be up doing something bad. You know, she just thought she put two and two together. What's the friend? Is it Jenny?
Oh, I don't remember her name.
I forget. We said it earlier,
but it's like she needs to be brought back in, and like she's withholding information, and now we're all going on all these rumors.
Yeah, it's just
It is a small town stuff.
It's just like, oh, this is bullshit. Like, yeah, you could say that you saw that, but you don't, Jess. It's Jess Riley. Yeah, like that was a little that was not cool. I just wanted to bring that up, that it wasn't cool. It was like, yeah, just because you saw something, you didn't see the whole picture.
I thought this was such an interesting scene because we never got the idea that Dylan wanted to be a father.
No.
And then now he's like, it's my kid. And he's like, let me look at him.
Yeah, we get to that later. But yeah, I guess he's been humbled by the whole experience. You know, the whole experience kind of made him think about things in a way that he didn't. And one thing, Brianna didn't seem to come visit him or his girlfriend.
I don't know if I think he's been, I'm going to let the jury be out on that.
Okay. He's got I don't think he's not a great guy, but I think maybe I would be surprised if this didn't change him. Based on what the preview for episode 4 looks like, some shit's going to go down. And I think he's going to find out some shit that he didn't think. I think he's going to find out he ain't the daddy next week.
Oh, I think he's not the daddy.
Yeah, I think it's Deacon Mark, like you said. Now you got that in my head.
I never watched the preview, so I don't know what happened because I definitely think he's not the dad. I don't think it's Frank. I definitely think it's going to be an adult. It's going to be somebody who is over, you know, not in her age demographic.
Yeah.
I don't know how they're going to get his DNA.
I don't know. I don't know. All right. Okay. So we're going, the next scene is they're at the 37th annual winter food drive. basically the whole town's there. We see Brianna, the only time that we see her, helping out her parents, probably. Her parents are probably doing like a something there, selling their food. She doesn't look pleased about anything.
She never looks pleased.
No, she's a very sullen child.
She's like a eating shit face.
Yeah.
Like just constantly angry.
Yeah, just an angry, angry child. We see Beth Hanlon there. We see, I think we
her brother.
Her brother Freddie's there. We see Helen, and we see Betty Carroll there. They're selling spaghetti dinner tickets.
Oh yeah, I forgot about this, and she's looking at the guy.
Yeah, and they're gossiping about Kathy Leahy's son. We don't know his name yet, but Betty thinks he's a murderer, like one of those people that leaves the town and then comes back in 10 years, and then you find out he killed somebody in Florida. Mm-hmm. He's at another table getting paint on his face, looking like a
The Crow, looking like that with the Crow.
Oh, like Brandon Lee.
Yeah.
And she's like, he's staring at me. He's like, is he still looking at me? And Helen's like, yeah, he's looking at you. So that was kind of funny. Mare is grilling hot dogs and burgers with John, who's mad at her. He's mad at Mare because she made Frank take a paternity test. And he doesn't tell her that until Mare nudges him on to say, hey, we've been standing here for 2 hours, you know, 2 hours, you're like 2 feet away from me, and we've been standing here, you know, why aren't you talking to me? And that's what he tells her. And then he confirms that they got home at 2:30 a.m. that night. They were singing Uptown Girl, and Frank pissed in the closet. And he showed her a picture. And this is the thing. You could see, this is Kate Winslet, so fucking great. Like, she looks at the picture, she kind of smiles a little bit, because it's not any like, you know, there's still like love there for Frank. Yeah. It's not like, oh, I want him back. Or maybe you never know, but it's just, she was just kind of, and it's not like a soft thing, but it's just like, oh, okay. Yeah. He didn't do it. And I kind of got,
sorry, go ahead.
No, it's just like she kind of got love for him. That's all. She still has love.
That was another place where she didn't say it. She could have said to her friend, I didn't think he did it. I just have to clear him. That's a part of the process. Yeah. And it would have alleviated that. But it's like she doesn't want to alleviate. And to what you're saying, where she smiled and felt the love there, back to when she was getting ready for the date and her mom was like, oh, you should go over there and prance past his house. Mm-hmm. He made it clear that Frank did the leaving.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's true. Yeah. If not that, there's a lot of things that would show why Frank left. And normally it's the woman that leaves the main, you know, it's because she's the main character, her spouse left, you know, because she's the one with the.
You mean normally in life, it's the woman that leaves?
In these TV shows.
Oh, in the TV shows.
Yeah. And most of the time it's usually a man that leaves. Luther. I'm kind of comparing this to Luther. Starting to compare this to Luther in a lot of
Luther vibes.
Yeah, because Luther's lady left him and she got with somebody, you know, and it's just like he's like the troubled, you know, cop. So yeah, it's definitely I almost just thought it was inferred that he left. You know, he was definitely the one that left.
Oh, I think it was, but it's just like with those scenes, like I think they just clarify.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. She's been left and there was still love and, you know,
that's a great point.
She's also a woman who, you know, has been on all these other things. Mm-hmm. The person that she loved left her, lives behind her.
Yeah. So
after it wasn't a mutual decision, I don't think.
No, I think she probably wanted to work things out. She would say, I can make it work. And he's like, no, I want to leave.
She probably didn't say that, but she thought it.
She probably
doesn't say anything.
Oh, man. So.
Also, those hot dogs look good. I'm so hungry.
Okay, we're almost done.
I didn't know. I didn't mean that. Anytime I see food, I'm like, could eat that.
I'm a burger guy. It looks like they burnt those burgers, but I would have eaten them anyway.
Oh man, I love burgers.
Oh my god, me too. I won't. Okay, so
I want one right now.
I went to Fuddruckers yesterday, and I hadn't been there in over a year, and it was amazing. Okay, all right. So she sees Zabel. Zabel motions her over to where he is. He comes to see her, and he says that they tells her that they got an anonymous tip about Deacon Mark regarding the circumstances surrounding his transfer to St. Michael's. And they go to the rectory, and the lights are on, but nobody answers. And then we see Deacon Mark creepily looking through the window. Hiding stuff again.
Hiding.
And they don't. This isn't the part where they go. They're like, we're gonna go at him full force, but not. Zabel asked at some point in this episode, should they go
later?
It's later. Okay. All right.
Because she says it's the only chance. We only get one more chance.
That's what I thought. And this is the moment you alluded to earlier. We go back to the high. So they say. They don't get an answer. They leave. And back at the hospital, Dylan asks his dad to put DJ on his lap, even though he's not supposed to have pressure on his leg. And he's got DJ on his lap and he just stares at him.
Yeah.
What did you think about that? I mean, you alluded to it a little earlier, but is he just wondering what's going on, or is he just like.
Well, part of it scared me. A part of it made me feel scared. I don't know what it was.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, that, you know, the way he was just staring into that child, what I felt uncomfortable. Obviously, he was looking to be like, you know, are you my son? But then also, I do feel like he has been angry at that kid. Having to make him be an adult before he was ready.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why it's like the idea that he would so passionately protect that it was his child. Was a little bit shocking to me, because a lot of his behavior felt like he would be like, I didn't want him anyway. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see what happens in episode 4 with that, because I think things are going to come to a head in that regard.
Did you feel the same way about that look?
I felt like he's just thinking like maybe he's not the dad, or, you know, maybe there's some relief, but maybe there's a bittersweet feeling that, you know, it's not his. Maybe he has maybe I'm thinking too deep about it, but maybe he does still maybe he had feelings for Aaron. Still, like, maybe he's probably processing Aaron's death, because I don't think he killed her.
I don't think he did either. No.
Yeah, he's processing that, you know.
I don't think he has it together enough to like take her somewhere, kill her, take her back.
No.
You know what I mean? He's not.
Right. So the next scene is, it's morning. Mare's awakened by a call from Betty Carroll, much like the first scene of the first episode.
Mm-hmm.
She goes to the house. Somebody vandalized her shed by writing Betty's titties and a pair of titties on her shed. And Mare's like, oh, that's pretty funny. And Mr. Carroll's basically, well, they don't look like yours. And yeah, that's another scene with levity in it. And they said, well, did you set up the camera that you got from Best Buy? He said, oh yeah, I did. Let me go get my glasses. Mare goes over and looks at the iPad with the camera. She sees that it's probably it's Kathy Leahy's kid putting his middle finger up to the camera, actually, and beginning to vandalize the shed. She deletes it. Why do you think?
I'm hoping she deletes it because she's gonna, it seems, I'm not hoping because I feel like that she keeps doing these things, but I believe it's because she's going to go over there and talk to him and be like, I know you did this.
Yeah.
If you do it again. Because like with the first episode with the brother breaking into the house and then her being like, you know, helping to get his gas and electric turned back on. I think that she wants the best for everybody. And she knows that like, she doesn't want to charge a teenager. So yeah. She wants to like go and explain to him why he can't do this and give him another chance. That's what I'm thinking it is.
That's what I think it is too. But like, I was looking at some other recaps and stuff, and they were like, I can't believe that. I mean, she'll do any, basically after what happened towards the end of the episode, everybody's like, I can't believe what she did with the blah, blah, blah that we're going to talk about soon. I think this is something different.
Oh, I think it's totally different. I think she's trying to make it so that kid doesn't get like
a record
when he's just acting up.
Yeah.
He's going to give him another chance. I think that's what that is.
I agree with you. I agree at 100%. So, another big scene. Mayor Set meets up with Carrie at the halfway house. They're basically arguing about custody for Drew.
Well, it starts out nice.
There's niceties. And then the gloves come off after Mayor says that, you know, she wants Carrie to wait until the end of the school year. Carrie doesn't want to wait because she got an apartment, and Mayor doesn't, you know, she's setting herself up to take care of her son. Mayor doesn't want to give him up. She says she'll tell the court that she's an unfit mother and that she sees ghosts in the trees and she talks to people who aren't there. Carrie lashes back and says she's on meds. She hasn't had an incident in 16 months. She tells Mayor that Kevin hated her. And this is the second explosion this episode, basically, which is revealing backstory. Kevin hated her. And then just like, you know, Brianna said in episode 2, that's why your son's dead, because she's a bitch. So Mayor's just like, what? Mayor's like, all right. Mayor can't really say anything after that.
At that moment, I knew what was going to happen. I knew what was going to happen next, because she said, I'll do anything to keep this kid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I felt like Mayor was actually trying to take Richard's advice, which is huge for her, by being like talking to her and by saying, can you just wait till the end of the school year? Like, let him finish it out, you know, and then Carrie didn't budge. And then
Sozy,
she dug in.
Yeah. Sozy Bacon, is that her name? I don't want to just say Kevin Bacon's kid and Kira Sedgwick's kid. It's Zozy. Is it Sozy or Zozy?
You know, it's so funny because, like, obviously she's done the work. She's gotten sober. She's trying to get a job so she can have an apartment and have her kid. And I'm so not on her side. You know,
I'm not either. No, I'm not either, because she's kind of being an asshole.
You're like, just let her finish the year out. You know, that makes sense. Your kid's in the middle of the school year. He's got ticks. They're trying to get a good pediatric, you know, and then she's like, well, I'm doing this for Kevin because Kevin wouldn't want you raising his kid.
Yeah.
I feel like that was a real low blow.
It was very low. I love this scene. I love Sosie Bacon and her acting. I love this scene together with them. Because Kevin Bacon, and they are from Philly, and she was saying it was hard for her to get back into that accent because she used to visit her grandfather in Philly. And after he passed, I think he passed when she was young. So she had to like relearn that accent and really get around it, because if she messed it up, then people were going to be on her. Her relatives were going to get in her shit.
She does a great job.
She was great. She was great.
It's a great character. I mean, I don't like the character, but she's great.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I don't like Carrie because she's not making Mayor feel good. I'm not a fan of her, but I'm a fan of Sosie Bacon and her acting. All right.
Yeah, she's a great actress.
So this is like, Mayor's like, all right. And
I literally knew exactly what was going to happen from that scene. I was like, this, because I knew that she just can't fucking help herself.
Mm-hmm. She was basically like, okay, bitch.
Yeah, that's exactly what she was like. All right.
Yeah.
Because then, and you also know in your mind, what can she do? And I know what she can do as an officer. You know what I mean?
Yep. So the next scene, Zabel and Mayor come up with two suspects. And they say it's Dylan, either Dylan or Kenny. And there's only one of them with a registered gun. They say it's either a family member or intimate partner. Then they say there's there's Deacon Mark with his phone records. And then this is when they say Mare doesn't want to go after him because he'd lawyer up with the church and that would become a thing. And so she wants to wait. And then they said, you know, why Zabel asked, why would, you know, Kenny do it? And why would he admit, you know, it says, would she say you'd be surprised what people will admit to do, will admit to do, and then not and what they would hold back.
Yeah. I don't remember the exact word.
Yeah.
That scene I felt was a little confusing because for a second I thought she was saying Kenny was the only, they were the only people with registered guns. And I was like, that's impossible. But they were just saying on their list of suspects. Yeah.
Right. Right. So then she asked Zabel about how he solved that case in Upper Darby. And he basically said it wasn't magic. He just kept, you know, interviewing people over and over again until he found a crack. And it became, it was the neighbor who had an hour that he couldn't account for. He was in construction and dumped the body at a site and at a construction site. And he, you know, he brought her home, you know, it was, she was dead, but he brought her home and that's all that matters. It still seems like even though he cracked the case and he's labeled as this wonder kind of sorts, he still feels bad about it. You know, it's, he still feels, you know, I don't know. He just, it's not the success that everybody's calling it.
Yeah. I think he's humble. And I think he also feels like, that was like a, it seems like he just feels like that was like kind of a one-off thing. I'm not sure, but he obviously, like, he's obviously, Mare is obviously mentoring him.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. So after this scene, see, I didn't know what you knew at the time. Mare goes to the evidence room and takes out, did you know off the rip that that was heroin?
I knew it was drugs.
Use drugs, takes drugs, leaves it out. I didn't get that at first. I thought
it looks more like club drugs with the green sticker on it, but I knew it was drugs.
I thought it was like maybe she was thinking about the case. Maybe I was just being absent-minded at the time. But she takes the drugs out, and I thought it was something like she was working on the Bailey case, the Bailey thing, but it wasn't. So we'll get back to that later in a bit.
Well, she also looks guilty while she's doing it.
Yeah, like she walks out making that guilty face, just like her other castmates. After doing something she shouldn't be doing. Siobhan, we cut to Siobhan working on her documentary again. She says, you know, about Kevin, he didn't say goodbye. He didn't kiss his son. He and Carrie weren't getting along then. Which makes me think that Kevin didn't hate Mare, like she said, you know.
I don't think so.
I don't think he did. He seemed like a nice guy that was very troubled.
Carrie's just mean.
Yeah, she's an asshole. And he sent her a video clip of him at the beach or something. And that was like the last time she heard his voice and it was kind of muffled. And then the next scene is Siobhan going back to the radio station to quote unquote bring the sweatshirt back.
Solid move. Good. Solid move.
Solid move indeed. And she asks Anne if that offer still open. Does she still have that ticket to Boy Genius? And she says, yeah. And so they're going to see Phoebe Bridgers.
I was like, thank goodness. Somebody in this episode is breaking old patterns and choosing the healthy one.
Yeah, one person on their recap said she's broken up with Becca, but we don't know that for sure.
Oh, we don't know that.
Yeah, I was like, how did you get that? We didn't get any mention of them breaking up.
She could have, but she also could just be going on this date.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, because I didn't notice that. And it's a person that I like, but I just like, how did you get that? Maybe he just inferred that, but whatever. Anyway, this is our podcast. Anyway, Mare gets a text from Richard asking, she's at the bar. She gets a text from Richard asking how the meeting went with Carrie. and they're at the bar. Zabel is there. He's celebrating his 15th anniversary.
He is tanked.
Yeah, he's tanked. He went to Ridley High School, class of 2005, so he's 33-ish. I did the math. And he asked why Mare is there. She's trying to drink away a bad thought. He buys her a drink, tells her, you know, that the reunion was kind of awful. This is basically their post game, he says. And it was awful because his ex was there, his almost ex-wife. They were about to get engaged. And before the wedding, she woke up one day, said, "Nope, I'm not in love with you anymore." And he kind of muses on the fact that you think life is going to be one way and then it turns out to be another. Mare says, you know, yeah, I thought being a cop would be a good, you know, something like she's talks about how
she says being a cop, but the rest, she didn't think the rest of her life would fall apart.
Yeah. The rest of her life would fall apart around her. He kind of hits on her after.
Yeah, he was hitting on her a little bit.
Yeah, I would have too, if I was drunk like that. And his friends are trying to get him to take another shot. And he's like, "Hey, you know, I kind of want to be here with you." And she's like, she scoffs at him. The closed caption says, "Mare scoffs." And she's like,
they both back up off it real quick.
Yeah, yeah. It's possible that she might. Well, we'll talk about that in a bit. Well, based on what happened, we're spoiling this shit. She's getting taken off the case, but she might use him liking her to get back on. Because, I mean, in the preview for next week, Mare shows up at his door and says, "What are you doing here?" And he says, "What are you doing here?" to Mare. Anyway, after he leaves, we see the drugs again. We see Mare look in her pocket and the drugs. And this is where we know, like, okay, some shit's about to go down. What are your thoughts on that sequence there, that scene?
Well, we learn more about him.
Yeah.
His vulnerabilities. Mm-hmm. They're developing a relationship, and we see her. He says, "Well, did I make you feel a little bit better?"
Yeah.
And she's like, "Yeah, yeah, yeah." So I felt like she was also, in doing that, she was sort of like letting him off the hook for being drunk and hitting on her. You know, yeah. She's like, you know, kind of like recognizing that he's coming from a place where he had to see his ex, you know what I mean? Just being very human in that moment. And then she's like, "Yeah, yeah, yeah." And then, you know, and then you're like, she's still going to do this fucking horrible thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we cut to Deacon Mark and the Dark on the bridge, tossing out Aaron's pink bike into the water, dumps it into the water. He's a piece of shit. And
he did something.
I think your theory that he's Aaron's baby's daddy is the right theory.
Well, I think we're gonna find out why he got transferred.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That comes up,
and it's probably something, you know, maybe it's like hitting on young women or whatever, and then
mm-hmm. and not boys.
Equal opportunity.
No, I know. I'm just saying, like, this is kind of a change. You don't really see that.
No, that's what I'm saying. The Catholic Church.
It's all bad, but I mean, sorry. I was raised Catholic. So then we go. So next morning, Mare is sitting at her at the kitchen table. Gets a knock on the door. It's Chief Carter. He comes to the house to confront her. He tells her that Carrie
To come outside.
Tells her to come out. Yeah.
And as soon as that happens, you're like,
yeah, it's like, this is it. You're like, this, oh shit. So he tells her to come outside, put your coat on, come outside. She goes under his umbrella. He says, "You know, wherever the Carrie." He's like, "Yeah, she got pulled over last night with two packets of heroin. And she said it was probably planted on her by Mare." And he says, you know, and Mare denies it. And he's like, you know, he says, you know, I thought it was, I thought I was like, no, I thought it wasn't you. But then I noticed that they were packets from the Barnett case about a year ago or something. And he says, he knows that she did it. Part of me wants you to never wear a badge again. But he basically tells her that he still believes in her, that she could be saved. And he tells her to go inside and get her gun and the badge. She goes in to get her gun and the badge. And as we see her open the drawer, there's a picture of her and her dad when she was a kid. And she's holding back tears. She gives gives the chief her gun and badge. He drives away. And then blackout.
Well, she didn't even just plant the drugs. She altered the log.
Yeah, altered the log.
And he's like, I know you did it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he's like, we'll tell everybody that you're taking time off for mental health. Which, not like she doesn't need it. You know what
right,
I mean?
Right.
And she's absolutely wrong. This is a horrible thing to do. You know what I mean? But still, I'm on her side.
Of course.
Give her another chance.
And this is the classic thing. The chief, the captain, or whoever tells the hero. And if you're thinking about going on with that Aaron McMenamin case, don't do it, Mayor. Don't do it. But you know she's going to do it.
She's going to do it tomorrow.
Yeah. She's going to do it that day. and it's just, I think this is, everything's being set up for her redemption. Everything is being, because he still believes in her. And it's just, she's just at the bottom right now. And we're going to see her come up. She's going to solve. I mean, the way that that promo for episode 4 is set up, that, you know, Katie Bailey's still alive and she's been kidnapped.
What?
I don't know if it's, I could be wrong, but
I didn't watch the preview,
but Don, the cancer stricken mother, mom. Katie's mother, gets a call and says, you got to give me $5,000 or, you know, this is whatever, if you want to see your daughter again. So I don't know. It could be anything. But
oh, my God. We have a whole week to get through to wait for this.
I know. We have a whole week of life to get through.
Did we decide that there were 7 episodes of this or 8?
I believe there's 7.
So we're at the halfway mark.
Yeah. The IMDb has 7, I believe. Let me just make sure. Yeah, 7 episodes.
All right. Yep.
The last episode is called Sacrament, and there's 7 sacraments. So, interesting.
So I'm going to think on what enter number 2 means.
Yeah, if I know anybody, if you're listening, message us, hit us up on Twitter, and let us know what enter number 2 means. You got any final thoughts on this?
I just, you know, we had to have this episode because she had to cross a line. Mm-hmm. But I feel real bad about it.
Yeah. I called her Mayor Furman. You don't, nobody gets that. The Mark Furman. Sorry. Whatever.
But no, she's definitely the reference so I can get it.
Mark Furman in the OJ case. Like they said that he might have planted evidence at the
crime scene
and all that. Yeah, I don't know if that's true or not.
Okay, solid. My bad for missing it.
No, that's all right. Nobody on Twitter got it either. Nobody cared. But I thought this was a great episode, great acting, great storytelling. I like how things are. I like how it's a whodunit, but we're getting to learn more about the people in Easttown and their relationships with each other and the history. And I like how stuff is. I like how things are unfolding.
Yeah. And we have so many layers. Like we got to find out about the back neighbor, you know what I mean? And the down the tits. And we got to find out about what all these other people that are clearly guilty of something are doing. And then, you know what I mean? She's got to have some kind of resolution with Frank. You know what I mean? All these things that are around the murder, you want the mom to find her a daughter from the, you know, the years ago. Okay, there's so many things happening, and Mare in the middle of it all, you want her to be able to keep her kid. She's obviously not going to. She's imploding, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well folks, that's it for this week's episode for Leah Bonema, and I'm Chris Lambert. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next week with our recap of episode 4, Poor Sisyphus. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Thank you.